Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and how deeply grateful I am you chose to be with me for this very interesting program on August 12th, 2018. I've entitled it, I'm Fine. You know what that means. Won't get into that. But nonetheless, I get some very interesting email about people who think they're doing just fine, but have a little question mark as to maybe how fine they really are. I want to remind you that these radio programs are TV programs, and everything that you see on the Aspire website is there due to the kindness and the generosity of my sponsors, who I dearly appreciate and adore. They allow me to not only do these radio programs, my TV programs, but also they allow me to go to hospice and serve people there. There's many beautiful things that they allow me to do with their contributions, and I hope that you will help and sustain this radio program, our TV programs, my work at hospice with your tax-deductible gift, which is what makes it all happen. It is only through your contributions that we are allowed to continue, and I hope that you will join our sponsorship program. And for it, you get a lot of really nice things. The message of the month, each and every month, that's on the subject that is my monthly, shall we say, quest for the year. I always each month choose a different subject. It's a part of helping you understand the nature of what it is to be in an authentic spiritual practice, to attain to love, to attain to something greater than just our five senses. And then you get to listen to, if you want, all of the discourses I did for my TV programs. There's 122 of them there. They're all yours. You can do what you want with them, as well as my podcast, videocast, and commentaries twice a month. So there is a lot there for you, and it is my way of saying thank you. And if you would be interested and want to know a little bit more about it, go to the website at aspire.org. You will see a button there that says support. Just click on it. A menu will come down, and it will say why support Aspire, and it will tell you everything you and I need to know about what it means to support Aspire and why it's very important. You do far more with your gift than you would imagine, and I thank all of you for your consideration. I'm fine. Everybody thinks they're doing well, and yet people have even the ones that think they're doing well have their doubts about doing well. So let me get just right into the questions. First one comes from Arlene. I made it, Greg. She writes me, I can retire comfortably now, and I get to do what I want. Now, the question is, what do I want to do? Arlene. She, in her email, asked me to give her some suggestions. Arlene, there are so many things that the world needs now, and it is love, sweet love. And I don't know what to say to you because I don't know you, but I will say a few things to you here that hopefully will be of service to you in one way or another. So you have made it, you say, or you think, and now you don't need to work anymore, like you say, or you think. And now you're looking for something to do, and you can do whatever you want. So now it gets down to, what do you want? What kind of person are you? I think that wants show the character of a person, especially in your position where you're quasi-free, or you think you're free. And so you can kind of choose and pick what you want to do, what you think is important to do. And I think that's a very interesting place to be, because now nothing holds you back from being in the unconscionable. Now, what do I mean by that? Usually that word, the unconscionable, is a derogatory term for doing something terrible. But really what it means is that you get to do something that is out of the box. You get to do something tremendously meaningful. You get to do something that is beyond the confines of your thinking, the confines of your right and wrong, good and bad. You get to do something maybe magnanimous and magnificent. So now you can live, according to what you say, due to your finances, an unconscionable life, an inexplicable life, where you can do things that bring out the ineffable sense of understanding the mystery of life. You can be in service to humankind if you like. And that would be a very, very wonderful thing for you. To be in service to humankind, to give and to, I'm going to say this, and I don't know you, so I can't be specific, but I can say this to you in a way that could help you. You can, so to speak, make up for your karma. You have a chance now to do something infinite. You can now live your life and change the complexion of your karma by doing things that are kind and helpful to humankind, that stretch you beyond the limits of your tolerance. This is a very important thing for all of us, to be stretched beyond the limits of our tolerances. Most of us stay in this little tiny close-knit thing where we are only doing what is in our comfort zone, that kind of thing. And really, what is that? Anything that gratifies me, that doesn't force me out to do things that could be very helpful to another person's life. That would be a very beautiful thing. But do people do that? Well, some do. I know some people at hospice who do some very, very beautiful things to help humankind. I know nurses who do really beautiful things to help humankind. And these two types of people are unconscionable. They don't think about the money. They don't think about being uncomfortable. If they are, they're graceful about it, and they do it in such a beautiful way. I enjoy working with them, and it teaches me so many things about what it is to be an unconscionable giver. What I would suggest, Arlene, is that you live your life to do the things that would, so to speak, eradicate the past of your life, the karmic past of your life. And I would keep it in that genre. I would do things, if I were you, that allowed me to do everything that would make love possible. That's what I would do. Anything that would make love possible. And I would do it in service to humankind as a form of gratitude. There is nothing more noble, Arlene, than devoting your life to doing things to help other people, especially when those people need your help so deeply. So you're going to have to find something or some organization that you feel maybe is overlooked. You know, the homeless are overlooked. They really are. We're going to have more and more and more as the economic situations get worse and worse and worse. And there's a lot of mental illness in this country, a lot of it. People using guns to shoot people. These people are mentally ill, and we're getting more and more of it, and it's coming out more and more. And maybe you would want to work with the homeless. A lot of them are mentally ill. And maybe you could give your time to helping unfortunate people with diseases and difficulties in the mental realm and learn a lot. I don't know what they would be. I used to work with all sorts of disabled children when I was a teenager. It was a part of our service to the community. And we all did it. It was one of the most noble things about being in a youth group, a church youth group. It was the Unity, Youth of Unity, they called it. It was wonderful. We would go and help children and be with them, play with them, talk to them. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful thing. Be in service to humankind. That's all I can say. And maybe that, Arlene, will open up other doors inside you for humility. And if that does that, if humility comes forth, which is one of the greatest gifts that any of us can ever have in the course of a lifetime, then a great love will ensue. And you will find, such gratitude for every day of your life. And what will basically happen or could happen is you could see how your life was charted out, mapped out to be in service to humankind in this way. What an honor. And I have great respect for anyone who does this. I have students that do it. They're not retired, even some of them, but the ones that are, they go out and they work at hospice and the home, work with the homeless, and they work very diligently, and I am very, very grateful that they do that. It's a very important thing for them, and they would tell you, if they were sitting here, how beautiful and rewarding that whole experience is of being in service to humankind. Think about it, Arlene. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next one comes from Linda. She does not tell me where she lives. I don't need people in my life. I've had too many as it is. All I need are my pets. But somehow I'm worried I'm going to be that woman in the corner house, she says here. I'm paraphrasing it because she goes into nauseating detail here. Who has just got a house full of cats. Am I correct that all I need are my pets? Linda, I don't know you. I don't know your history. I don't know where you've been, where you haven't been. People can be very annoying, and I understand that. They can be very selfish, annoying, petty, jealous, prideful. I understand all that. I do. I really do. And when you get a big dose of humankind, and you realize all the neurosis, psychosis, and illnesses that are out there mentally and emotionally, you kind of look at it and go, God, is there any cure for the common cold here? There's so many people with so many difficulties, mental, emotional, psychological. I understand. But you can't sit there in your house filled with pets and think that now you're the queen bee. I watch people do this from time to time, and it makes them feel important. They can control the animal, you know, and they're. I think it's noble to take care of animals. First of all, you need to understand that. I really do. I am owned by a Cocker Spaniel, and I understand what it is to be owned by one. But the whole idea is to love them, to care for them, and to help them along in their life in any way, shape, and form you can. But the thing that is most important here is just because people are difficult doesn't mean I lose my tolerance for them. While I love, after a hard day's work at hospice or with my students, to be with my Cocker Spaniel and to hold her, squeeze her, kiss her, and play with her, which I do, doesn't mean I would forego people either. I'm going to say something to you, Linda. I hope you can understand this. Human beings are in desperate need for love. What they call love, which is merely emotionality out of the human heart, is the thing that breaks them down and tears their life apart. It is the human heart that is the real issue, the real problem in people's lives. The human heart both loves and causes division and hatred, believe it or not, and jealousy and pride and all those things that are not good for us. So you have all of that going on with human beings. But if you can show them a love that is beyond the conditions of psychology, beyond the conditions of right and wrong, good and bad, beyond the family way, if you can show a just cause for something so beautiful that lives within them and you can bring it out in them, then you've done something rather noble. You've done something rather beautiful. And you may not get to do this for hundreds and hundreds of people, but maybe one out of those hundreds will get it. One person might get it. We forget about love. We just want it. And I have found this to be epidemic in people's lives, where they just want love. They just want it to come to them. They're not much interested in lovingness and finding the lovingness of their heart. They just want to be loved. It's all that matters to them. And of course, if I live in that manner, I do a great deal of damage to my livingness. It is very important that my life, your life, Linda, is surrounded by love. If you have great love for your cats, it would seem to me, or your animals, I don't know if they're all cats, I'm assuming, but if you have great love for your pets, you would have great love for people as well. You can't love one without it spreading to another. So the way that looks, and what I'm really saying to you here, is extremely important. If you love one thing in this world, you will have to love all things. That's the way it works. And if I only love my pet over a human being because the pet is loyal to my affections, I've learned nothing. I have to learn to love my enemy as myself. The enemy is not other people, it's me. It's the way I draw people to me. It's the people I do draw to me that makes for the discrepancy. So if I'm only living my life in accord with the idea of getting affectionized and all of that, and living as affection and getting it to commandeer my ego, then I have gained nothing. Human beings challenge us. They have different points of view. Can I love you because you have a different point of view than I do? You have a different opinion than I do. You can't allow your mind and your emotions to be prejudicial if you're going to really love. Pets are easy to love because they don't talk. They only have instinct. And their instinct is to love the person that feeds them. And that's just the way it is. My Cocker Spaniel loves me because I feed her. I take care of her. I mollycoddle her. She loves all that. But if somebody else were to come in and do the same thing, I doubt I'd be even a memory in her. That's just the way animals are. And that's okay by me. I don't have a problem with that. The problem that we all have is that we love to be loved. That's our problem. So if you are really interested in love, really authentic love, then the thing to do is to do those things that would put you out there in this world to love, quote, your enemy. Your enemy isn't people. Your enemy is the kind of people you dislike, the kind of people you find unlovable. And that's within me. That's within you. We have these standards that we think we should live by and that we can live by that would formally make us feel like we're self-righteous if we find someone who has the same silly prejudices, the same silly desires, impulses that we have. We love people who indulge us and know how to indulge us, and that's about as far as it ever goes with human beings. So when you start thinking of it from that point of view, ouch, it hurts. You begin to see, oh, my love is really very conditional. It depends on environment and people and impulses and what they say and what they don't. You don't want to end up your life this way. only being the cat lady in the corner house in the cul-de-sac or whatever. You just don't want to do that. That doesn't make for a mature and beautiful existence. So there you are, Linda. I hope I helped you, and I'm sure I pissed you off, but you asked. Please forgive me. Really. Namaste. And the last question from Carol in Anaheim. She listens to it. As long as one has family, and my glasses, I'm not wearing them. As long as one has family, they are fine. But what did Jesus say about family? Why did he say you have to hate your mother, your father, etc., etc., Carol? Carol, Jesus took it even further. He didn't say this on one occasion. He said it on a couple of occasions. And he treated his mother, well, by the Jewish tradition, in a very cold manner. He called her woman. And on three occasions, he basically said, I have nothing to do with you. And he called her a woman. Yet he loved her. He loved her very much, but he didn't love her in the traditional way that one would probably want to be loved. And he did warn us about our family. He said, unless you hate your family, in Aramaic, the word hate means to put away emotionally, psychologically, just put away. Unless you hate your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your life, la, 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 you cannot follow me. And he was right, because you will put family ahead of your need to progress, to attain to a great love that lives within you. And he was right about everything that he was saying, but it's very difficult to understand this. In my years of being a teacher, the greatest difficulties that students have brought to me are difficulties that their families have brought to them. And these difficulties didn't go away because they wanted them to go away. They were the source of great devastation in a person's life. People use family to circle the wagons and fight off the Indians, you know. That's the way we think of it. We can fight off society and our neighbors who don't like us because we encroach upon them or whatever. It's mentally ill stuff. It really is. So my only answer to you is this: to hide behind your genetics for the sake of trying to prove you're right or to prove self-righteousness in any way, or to try to do anything about self-preservation, is a useless experience, and it demeans your spirituality. Can't be in a spiritual practice when you're trying to uphold your dignity, your idea of what is dignified and right and better than, and all those other things that we like to get involved in. Love your family, but they're just people. Do for everyone else as you would do for your family. That's the key. Forgive and love and give, and again, forgive. Have great mercy for those around you. After all, to have mercy for those people who are around me is really very wise, because for them to be around me, it takes great mercy. You think about it that way. Gosh, to be with me, to be around me in a day-to-day situation, you have to be very forgiving, you have to be very kind, and you have to be very merciful. So I'm going to give that back to you, in the form of every way in which I know how, to be merciful to those who have to deal with me on a day-to-day basis or on any basis at all. That would be a very loving and wise thing to do. It would inaugurate a great compassion in you. Nothing is more important in this life. Nothing is more important in this life, Carol, than attaining to mercy. It is the only meaning to this lifetime there really can be. To have a sense of being merciful and live in mercy is a very, very important thing to achieve. And I hope I got that over to you. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Thank you. I hope that helps. Please forgive me. Well, that's our program for the weekend. I hope that they were of service to you. I hope you'll consider being a sponsor. And I hope you have a beautiful weekend. I'll see you next week. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.